I'm not going to kill myself in the process.
We've all done that.
That's
interesting, because I wonder, because I've had a few friends who actually, experiment with ghost hunting and stuff in the past, and for the most part, I like going to abandoned places. I don't necessarily search for ghosts, per se, when I go to, but I like visiting abandoned, whether it be reformatories or insane asylums we've had in the area, that it was kind of, it was not even trendy, it was just kind of a thing as a teenager. It was something that I got into doing.
Right. When you do it as a hobby, it's called urban exploration.
Yeah.
Urban exploration, exactly. And so I mean, at that level, I think that I'd be interested no matter what, whether I was searching for ghosts or not, just for the level of going to these locations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you used to take beer?
No. Okay. No, not really. No.
Then you did it correctly. Because
sometimes I probably wished I had a beer.
Sometimes me too, or at least a martini. But no, yeah. There are some people who do that not for the interesting part or the history or the documentation.
Right.
They do it just to party.
Just to go party, right?
Yeah, and you do that, and then you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah,
right.
More or less.
So I guess it depends on your intentions in that case.
Yeah.
But I have to say, one of my favorite websites has still got to be, what's the Ohio one?
Forgotten Ohio.
Forgotten Ohio.
Yeah, that was...
I found a good one called, the Essex something hospital, which I think is part of there was an exploration... site ring that I found it on. It was an excellent, I mean, just whoever it was, they went in and documented the whole place with pictures, and I mean, it's a really excellent site as far as if you're into the whole urban exploration thing.
There is a lot of people that do that, too.
There is.
Yeah.
It's something that I personally can't do. I mean, I did. I have to say, I did some, I conquered some that...
Doug in his rebellious young days.
Yes, in my rebellious mid-30s. I did indeed get into some interesting places, but...
rebellious early 20s?
You're still rebellious, though, dude, so there you go. But no, what happens is I just don't do that anymore. I find that when I go, for my own self, when I go to places that have rumors of paranormal activity...
Yeah, that's my motivation now.
That's what gets me.
That
tickles me. And if if somebody should just all of a sudden levitate in the air or something, then I would just be tickled pink. I'd be like, whoa, Rock, look, Scott's like 10 feet up.
I don't think I'd be tickled there.
Yeah, I'd be running if I saw that.
But
Doug, get me down.
Yeah.
Now.
But I'm telling you, that's the kind of thing that, or like if a ghost should float by or something that tickles me. That gets me going. The urban exploration, I did it, and it was interesting and it was fun, but it was not my cup of tea.
That all ties together though. It's amazing, and some people are like, man, these guys are really reaching today. stuff really correlates. And Max made Max said it. He made the point. Is that this idea, this mythology, it does tie hand in what we're doing.
Well, and I've seen several correlations. One of them is the quest. And I was in a fight once. Not really a fight, because, I was right. But
did you open up a can of whoop-ass on the guy?
There was a thing in a string of... bulletin board postings once.
Oh, God, you were fighting on the internet. Great.
Yes, and it's gone now. But I came at it as for ghost hunting and seeking out the paranormal and doing experiments in the basement and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
It's all the quest is more important, really. I think for me,
that's right.
Than the actual result.
I agree with that.
The result would be phenomenal. And it would change mankind forever if you said, okay, ESP exists, or okay, ghosts are here. Or, the result would be phenomenal, and I'm always looking for it, and that would totally rock and turn everybody around and make everybody wake up finally.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, right now, here and now, the quest is very important, and I enjoy it. But I don't step over boundaries now. I have my own moral guidelines, and I won't step over them.
And that's really important, and that's why people get chains put in their face in the Hellraiser movie. They step over those boundaries.
They step over the boundary, and look what happened.
Yeah. Now, right. I'm going to say it one more time.
Okay.
I'm going to say it one more time. Just
you don't have to convince me.
I don't want. I'm not trying to convince anybody. I'm just trying to say that this is fan fiction. This is fantasy, okay?
Yeah.
I don't want people getting the wrong impression, like, oh, my God. The guys from Ghostly Talk are worshipping Leviathan now, okay? I don't want people to get that impression. This is a fascinating subject, though, and it is fantasy. But it's based on, I don't care, just about everything. I can't find anything, really, on the top of my head that really is not based on reality, you know, which opens up doors to everything, more or less. Now, we're not going to have Jodie Foster on next week, okay? This is something that the mythology behind these characters, the mythology behind the Lament configuration.
You also were going to talk about, and I know your time's running short, so we might as well talk about...
I'm
going to
stay as long as I can today, as a matter of fact. We're going to go as long as we can here, okay, as far as I'm concerned.
The symbology. You said we were sitting out on the patio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, somebody hurt him. Somebody, you know, that's whose phone is that? Oh, break it. Break it. Break it. That's a groovy tune, though.
I can't believe it's down here.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
The symbology.
The symbology. You said one of the things about these boxes that just drives you up a wall is the symbology. And Max, you've said that there's, you know, artists who do these things. I mean, these are handmade. And how does the symbology get onto these boxes? And
well, there's a whole bunch of them. Why don't we try narrowing it down a little bit? I mean, I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
But, do we have
an
example?
In general, I mean, there's really loose guidelines I give to the artists beforehand sometimes. Like, I'm looking for this or that. But in general, I leave it up to the creativity of the artist.
Okay.
But I tend to pick or showcase the boxes that do have some sort of touchstone to real-life symbology.
Okay.
So.
And I know there's a, I said it earlier, there is this box, that you have one box on display on the homepage called the Mason's Keystone.
Right.
And
By artist Eric Gross.
Okay. And I think there is a story behind that one, too. I didn't pull that one down and print it out. But there is a story. I mean, these are written, like I said, there's a story written about a lot of the boxes on the site. If you click on the picture of the box, you can read a story about where this came from, okay? And they're based on real life. They're based on secret societies. There are these ideas that I see them interwoven, especially the Mason's Keystone. I remember looking at that box going, yep, I've seen that on the dollar bill, and yeah, I've seen that over here, and yeah, I saw that in my grandpa's lodge. There are these ideas. I've seen that your artist, especially Mr. Eric Gross, is all over your website, too. I remember that name.
He flooded me with just phenomenal work, I'm sitting on so much work of his, as far as not, you know, having it, just because the task is too much for me at this point. You know, he's somebody who's really got turned on by these mythos, and I think he's in the process of releasing actually a book that he's going to be selling that's going to have a number of his designs in it.
And that's super cool, too. I mean, this is just art. I mean, it's art, and more or less is art. But like I said, the thing that seems so fascinating here is just that they do base these things on some ideas from secret societies and these ideas that come from that. And some of the stories on the site that are really funny is that some of these people commission Philip Le Marchant to do these boxes, you know, somebody from this society or somebody from that society. And that's an interesting story. I mean, because I'm wondering,
Philip Le Marchant himself, if you look at his birth date, is the year 1717, which also corresponds with the opening of the Masonic Lodge.
You know, I didn't even think about that, because I've heard that date, the year before.
And I've always taken that as that Philip Le Marchant, in a sense, represents the Masons, who were actually the Reformed Templars. So, I mean, and you can follow these mystery cults all the way back to the beginning of civilization. The symbols themselves is what connects the dots for me, as far as connecting them to, say, in Persia with the Zohar, or you can go to Babylon, Egypt, Greece, Rome. It's all rife with these societies. And I personally believe that these societies never died out, or they continued on throughout, and they still exist in our modern time. It's just if you have the eye for the symbols and you know a bit about what they believe, you can almost practically see things in buildings. There's sacred geometry involved with buildings, streets. It just doesn't stop.
I've done a lot of studying on that. I have books stacked up everywhere, and I do have a lot of video presentations too. Actually, I have one, namely, speaking of like sacred geometry and interwoven geometry into landmarks and things like that.
Yeah,
I think I've discussed it maybe a high level on the show here, but there is a presentation by a gentleman I have at home from my buddy. You guys know about. The two co-hosts here know about my special friend who gives me tapes of all this neat stuff. He just, you know, we do our little thing, and he gives me these special tapes. He's like my little cartel guy, right? And,
interesting.
But he's always giving me like this really interesting stuff to like watch and read, and because he knows what he's really big into conspiracy and secret society. So he's more or less the guy, my go-to guy. For my secret society stuff. So whenever I have something I want to find out, I call him up, hey, sir, can you help me out? And he'll usually send, you know, airmail like 500 tapes over on the subject or whatever. One of the presentations he sent me in particular is by a gentleman named Doc Marquise, who, according to him, he is a reformed member of the Illuminati, mm-hmm. Okay, which is obviously, that's a big name. That's one of the bigger conspiracy secret societies on the planet today. You'll find a
secret
lot of information.
Society within a secret society.
Yeah, exactly. And he spoke about him. He was actually, I think, a first order witch at the time. Also, he practiced black magic. He was part of the Illuminati, and he did talk about, namely. And I love doing this. I did this to poor Doug and Will one night at the Coney. Yeah. I pulled a dollar bill out and showed them all.
He did. Yeah.
I pull a dollar bill out and start showing them all the. There's the ice cream truck. Great. Okay.
I heard that last week.
Yeah, it's summertime here at the haunted basement. So, the dollar bill has a lot of symbolism written into it. The one thing that in this presentation that I'm talking about, Dr. Marquise talked about, and this is what you're talking about, Max, is Washington, D.C., which...
Yeah.
It's... And I don't want to say I believe...
It's a fascinating book I have on my shelf here called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital by David Obison.
Okay.
And it's... I haven't got all the way through it, but it's basically saying that Washington, D.C. is based on astrological... alignment of the stars. It goes all into the dog star. Was it Sirius?
Mm-hmm.
And all these things are held sacred by the Masons themselves.
Yeah, and a lot, from what I've understood, well, according to Doc Marquise, his theory is that Washington, D.C. is based solely on Masonic imagery, symbolism, and it would more or less represent the marriage between the Masonic order and, I don't want to say the Satanist, but
right.
the dark arts, the black arts, more or less.
Well, the pentagram is usually, associated with the black arts. And
the inverted pentagram, yeah.
The inverted pentagram.
The upright
and
pentagram.
And if you look at the overheads of Washington, D.C., the inverted pentagram actually points right to the White House, which
exactly.
is something that's troublesome for somebody who doesn't hold the inverted pentagram as holy or sacred.
Well, yeah, and one of the big, cruxes that Doc Marquise talked about was that the White House, okay, and the House of the Temple, which is, that is the world headquarters for, I believe, the Scottish Rite of the Masonic Order. That's where if you want to become a 33rd degree Mason, you know, the highest, according to, what the public knows, the highest order of a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Mason, you'd have to go there. You have to go through the ceremony in Washington, D.C. at the House of the Temple, which is exactly 13 city blocks from the White House.
I'm sorry, say that again?
It's 13 city blocks from the White House. It's another number they've thrown in. And I've also, that's where you get into speaking about this term called gematria, which Dr. Marquise talked about, which I've done a lot of reading on too, which is more or less the idea of gematria is assigning a meaning to numbers. You know, and we have our the basic numbers, like, well, 13 is a good example. 13, according to Dr. Marquise in gematria, stands for depravity and famine. Okay, so you know when you start working these ideas in with the numbers, obviously 13 city blocks from the White House to the House of the Temple, you start thinking about that. And we've obviously, myself and you, Max, we've both looked at the overhead map of Washington D.C. and when you draw these lines, and these aren't lines that are made up. That's the weirdest part about it. These lines, they're streets. They're not, you know, well, let's see here. If you curve this line around here and then you take a ruler and draw it down here, you get a pentagram. No, these are like streets.
It's pretty plain.
It's very, very straight. I mean, I don't know all the streets. I don't know the whole map of Washington, D.C.
There's a word for it, a phrase called hidden in plain sight. And a lot of the symbolism, like torches, and is another symbol of the Illuminati, obviously by illumination. A lot of these things are hidden in plain sight, just like on the dollar bill. There's a number of esoteric meaning to the symbols on the dollar bill, how many people have seen the back of a dollar bill? You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we look at it every day. Just about all of us do, but yeah, like you just said, hidden in plain sight. It's right there in front of your face. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go, oh, they're tricking you, they're all after you. I mean, but there are these things that when you actually look up the information and see, like, okay. Why would the artist put 13 arrows in the talon of the eagle? There's got to be a reason for that.
Right.
Why would there be 13 stripes on the seal? There's got to be a reason for that. That you just I believe.
And to be fair, that they would say that 13 is important because of the original 13 colonies.
Exactly. That's what my dad said today.
That's the usual Masonic reply that you'll get. Mm-hmm. However, if anybody who studies the number 13 in, you know, magic itself, it takes on a deeper meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the symbology does, is that at lower levels in masonry, one symbol may mean one thing, but then as you progress in these levels, the symbols take on a broader meaning.
Mm-hmm. And that's there. If you, just for the people that are out there listening, you can go. I don't know. I mean, Google's our best friend here, obviously. But you could probably do a search on Washington D.C. map or some type of thing like that, and you can get a picture that we're talking about.
My website.
You have one on your site. Yeah, I remember seeing one on there also. And these lines, just think about it when you're looking at this. These lines that they have, look up get a big map if you want with all the streets on there, and these are streets where they're getting these lines from. These aren't just things that are made up by people trying to get some conspiracy theory going. These are streets. These are real streets. There is, well, just look at the map. I don't want to try to, like, throw stuff out there that I don't know 100% on. But it's an interesting idea. These ideas are very interesting. And these are interwoven into these boxes that you guys make at the Pyramid Gallery too. I saw a lot of the symbolism in these boxes, and it's fascinating. It really is. It's art. We know that. It's fantasy. We know that too. But it does make you think.
Yeah.
And that's what got me going on this, was just that it does make you think. And I did see the Secret Society banner on your site, and I'm like, oh, this guy is right up my alley. I need to speak to him. But it's obvious. I mean, there is these ideas there. There's something going on, especially Washington, D.C. I mean, that's a great example to throw out there to people to have them take a look at this. And it's very eerie to look at that.
I think if anybody even lives in any town of any sizable size, that they would find these symbols also in their own hometowns a lot of times. I was surprised to find them in my local town.
Really?
Yeah. I don't live in St. Louis. If you go to St. Louis, the arch itself in St. Louis is a symbol of masonry.
Okay. I had no idea about that.
What isn't a symbol of masonry?
Well, I mean, that can be said, but I mean, there are a number of things that are reoccurring symbols within masonry. I mean, I could name off many symbols that may not have a symbolic meaning to Masons, but in general, though, there's reoccurring symbolism from just about every, like the capitals of our states. The capitals themselves trace back to mystery religions in the sense capital, the name capital actually means temple to Jupiter. So you'll find that within our Romanesque world, we borrowed from the Romans not only the names, but the actual sometimes the actual meanings of the very names that we assign to our the foundations of our country. Mm-hmm. It is an amazing leap for some people, I think, to see these things. But if anybody studies like just ancient history in general, that you see these societies cropping up and over and over again and reemerging as different and under different names a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And to make these links, I think for some people it is a jump. There's a bit of a leap to say, well, this society in our time, is it related to, say, the Templars of the old days? And I think if you do the investigation, that's the main important thing as far as my site, is that I don't want to lead by the nose at all. I would like to kickstart some people into looking into things, but I don't want to try to spell out what the meanings are or where it's going, or that's less important to me as instead of just turning people on to discovering and looking into things a little bit deeper than they're used to looking into things, you know.
Well, yeah, and that's one thing I did read on your site after I found out that it was a fan fiction site, was just that. They're like, you know, this is a fan fiction site that I think this may have been out of your mouth, Max. It is a fan fiction site that I set up and designed, and I sell these boxes off there to make people aware of secret societies, to get people more aware of that. And that,
yeah.
Like you just said, you're not trying to, like, look, this is what's going on. It's all a trick. You're being lied to about everything. You're just trying to make people aware of it. You know, there are these things that do go on. And I can say that
with my personal belief that we have entered into a realm of where they are basically, they're going to emerge. And they've already kickstarted their emergence, I believe. So I think it's something that, regardless of what we believe now, I think in the near future we'll all be looking. I mean, I see who was it? There was a band called Coldplay just released an album, and they had a symbol on their cover. And this news story I picked up was talking about this new cover for this band Coldplay.
Mm-hmm.
But then it said, because it was kind of a puzzle, they wanted to look into other symbols, and so they started listing like symbols of masonry and bringing this up, using it as some sort of springboard to actually discovering the study of symbols.
Okay.
So I think that we're going to see more and more of this as time goes by. We're going to see an emergence of these societies. It's happened before in the 1800s. The Masons were so huge that our first break of the two-party system was the first third party was the anti-Masonic party.
Yeah.
Because they had gotten so out of control with their power that there is actually a party arose to oppose them.
Yeah. They were so powerful at one time that they basically made the decisions. That was at one time in American history. They made the decisions. And there was this party that you brought up, Max. It was the anti-Masonic party.
Within a couple of years, the anti-Masonic party offered up a president, somebody to run for president, and it turned out after the fact that person they offered up as president was actually a Mason, which shows you some of the power that the Masons have as far as actually being a part of something that's anti-Masonic. Yeah,
yes,
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
they infiltrated the anti-Masons.
Right, right. But if you go back and look at the first third party, it was the anti-Masonic party, which to have a third party be the anti-Masonic party shows you what a different view of secret societies they had in the 1800s than we do now. Now it's like X-Files. It's the media basically conditions us to believe certain things about secret societies. If the biggest way to discourage somebody now, to challenge somebody, is to call them a conspiracy theorist. If you want to basically call them nuts without saying that they're nuts,
yeah,
call them a conspiracy theorist. But, conspiracy theorist, the word aside, throughout history, there's been people that have been aware of secret societies. And what makes them powerful is their secrecy.
Well, yeah, obviously. And the one thing that has me interested in what you said, Max, was just that. Now you say that these groups may be surfacing a little bit more in the future here, maybe the near future, far future. Why would they do that now? Why wouldn't they have done it like 20 years ago or 30 or 40 years ago? Why would we think that? I mean, I just want your opinion on this, more or less.
Well, the theory is that ultimately it's about one world government.
Yeah,
that's the theory. That's the ultimate thing. If anybody is going kicking and screaming against secret societies, the fact that they believe that these societies are trying to bring about a one world society, a one world government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for some people, it could be a glorious thing if we could all be one world. And some people see it as that it could lead to tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there's a lot of fear and trepidation one way or the other. Some people see it as something that should happen and must happen, and they'll throw in on the side of completing it and having it done.
Well, there's another side who doesn't have
anything to do with it at all.
Well, I think about these, you know, the idea of that. We've talked about that more than twice on this show.
Mark Kimmel.
Yeah. It's about the worst parts of the Bible, basically.
Well, when you think about it, though, just let's take the Bible, and I don't want to say anything bad. Just put it over here for a second, okay? The idea of a one-world government. Mm-hmm. If you look at it from this point of view, look, we are all human beings. We are all human beings. I don't care what color our skin is, what our beliefs are, what God we worship, you know, what food we eat, what people we like, what people we don't like. We all bleed the same blood. You've heard that 1,000 times. And we all breathe air. We all live on the same planet. And that idea, when somebody says, yeah, we need to unify this planet and make it all one world, it's a beautiful idea, in my opinion. It's a beautiful idea. But there is this underlying idea and that people point out. Dozens, hundreds of people have pointed out to me in the past that, yeah, that is beautiful, Scott, and that's so wonderful, and the birds are flying, and we're all happy, and we live on this beautiful blue and green ball that floats around the universe.
And
that's
the butterflies are hopping from flower to flower.
That's cool. But here is the other problems. Here are the other problems. And that's what leads, just to keep it simple, that leads to this type of tyrannical idea of this one world government, where we're all one world now, but... We can't do anything. There is no freedom. We don't have the freedoms that we have now. Those may all be taken away. I'm not saying that's the way to believe. That's not, you know, I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, I have to agree with you. For my own thinking, my own way of thinking is, one world government is actually, I kind of like the idea, mm-hmm. right? But.
Yeah, but. Huge but.
There's, this is like
bigger butt, bigger butt than Christy Alley.
Yes. Ooh, got hurt.
Ooh, am I good? I'm going to hell for that one. Anyway.
Yeah. Now we're gonna have all the what she
Scientologists
after.
Wonderful.
Us. Great.
Right, can't wait.
The big butt here is not Christy Alley or Christy Alley's. It's the big butt is that they can't get it right now.
No,
right.
There's no way they can get it right on a global scale.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you've got something. Now, obviously, the United States is one of the larger land area countries.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got so many issues. I mean, you've got issues with, you know, the local governments, then the county governments, and then the state governments, and then the national government. When you've got all of that, you're trying to basically, you know, govern a society.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they're just doing it all wrong. I'm sorry, they are. It's just an absolute mess.
Yeah. Bottom line is, we can't even get it right in our own separate countries. How are we going to do it globally?
Right. And then you've got Canada. They're always complaining about this and that. And I listen to AM 800-CKLW, so I know. They're always complaining about things. And there's always not conspiracies over there so much as, oh my gosh, I'm totally losing my train of thought. It's not conspiracies, it's when, like, grafting, corruption.
Corruption.
Yeah, there's always corruption and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then you've got the totally different kind of governance of the, you know, Arab countries. And then you've got China with, you know...
Leave us the hell alone.
Yeah, well, not lately. Lately they want everyone to move in there. But
You have all these different ideas.
It's just not working. I haven't seen a working government yet.
That, and that's the other side right there. You have all these different ideas. You have all these beautiful different types of people out there that have these wonderful different ideas. Unfortunately, those ideas clash, and that's why we do have wars.
Right.
That's why people are getting killed.
Mm.
No, I'm not saying every time. That's just one reason.
Well, okay? Not this time. This time.
I'm not talking about this war that's going on right now.
Okay, yeah, because I don't care what you say. That's all about money and oil.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with
a lot of times you do have. I mean, just on the street, you walk in, you bump. God, I was at that gathering, that glorified traffic jam we call the Gratiot Cruise, okay, that where we had all these cars. Well, we had, like, one old-style cool car for every five Mustangs out there with spinner rims, okay?
Right. Right, yeah.
We had this glorified traffic jam going on there, and we have all these wonderful people all together, right? And they're walking by. I talked about this earlier to you guys. I'm like, I'm sitting there, and I think because we were like hanging out under a tent, we were having fun. We had a nice setup going. We had food. We were relaxing. People walk by and shoot you a dirty look, you know, or whatever. And
why?
And then they look at the store and see Enchanted Soul, and they're like, oh, they're crazy. They're those crazy ghost hunter kind of people. Oh, they're nuts. All right? And that's a classic example right there of, well, this isn't my thing. I don't really ghost hunt. I don't really deal with the paranormal. I'm too busy going to my 9-to-5 every day and taking care of my 18,000 kids. And you are this free-spirited person who is free. You're out there doing it, and you're trying something different. But I don't do that. I don't really agree with that. But that's cool. Hey, you know, I respect your opinion. I respect what you're trying to do. Unfortunately, it don't usually work that way. It's usually like, you're nuts, man. You're a conspiracy theorist. Which is, it's a good way of saying it, Max. You're crazy. You're being called crazy without being called crazy. And then there's this clashing of ideas. Well, you're nuts, so you're one of them hippie tops. You're one of those people that hug them trees, and I'm going to beat the crap out of you, right? Classic example right there of just, you know, just maybe two people, you know, bumping into each other on the street, right? It goes from country to country, too. And that's why, yeah, there is this, well, it'd be beautiful if we could all sit under one beautiful sun together and hold
hands.
But that's
counting on some sort of perfection from man. And I think, if anything, what we can all identify with is that man is not perfect. We fall. We make the wrong choices. We, you know, and so to place anything under one government is narrowing any kind of... any kind of debate, any kind of, you know, second chance at, you know, questioning something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if we narrow it down, the more we narrow it down, the closer we get to deifying man in a sense of being something he's not, which is perfect.
Yeah, it does take away these. It does take away your individuality. It does take away the other options. It does take away these other ideas. I mean, that's what this show is all about, is just that, different ideas.
Right.
And if there was, I know for a fact, okay, guys, look, we're going to have one big umbrella right here that you all have to be under, okay? And if you don't want to be under this, you're going to get wet, all right? Ghostly Talk wouldn't exist.
Ghostly Talk wouldn't exist.
We would not exist. We would not be welcome. We'd be outcast. We'd starve to death because we wouldn't have the barcode on the back of our neck. And, hey, look, that's really the bottom line of that.
But hang in, everybody. This is Doug. We're doing Ghostly Talk, and we will be back after this short break with more from Max Lichter of Pyramid-Gallery.com.
Every other Saturday on www.ghostishfiles.net.tc at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you there. Oh, man, I really gotta get out of here. Later.
Hi, this is Lisa Butler, American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena. Our website is aaevp.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
DrunkenDialing.com.
Just when you thought it was safe, you then made that booty call.
DrunkenDialing.com.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency. If this had been an actual emergency, the attention signal you just heard would have been followed by official information.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Thanks, Will. I do like your bumpers. We didn't play as many. Who was the music breaks? The musical guests today. Do you know?
Hold on.
I know the first. because these are all independent bands. Remember, Ghostly Talk.
Well, that was a short one.
Oh, that so was a short was, one. No it song. Didn't even have. Okay, but who was the first one? Because I remember when you were creating the bumper, Scott L said, "Oh, they rock. You've got to put them on."
Shotgun Logic.
So the first break earlier was Shotgun Logic, and they're an indie band. There will be a link to them on our website sometime tomorrow, when Scott L. puts up the archives. So this is Ghostly Talk. We're done from the Haunted Basement Studios in Fraser, Michigan. We're very, very fortunate to have Max Lichter on from Pyramid-Gallery.com. Gallery or galleries? Is it plural?
Gallery.
Okay, so Pyramid-Gallery.com. Of course, you'll have a link up on our homepage as well.
Well, thank you.
Because we always put links up for, guests. We have that huge guest section that's growing and growing, and which is really awesome because we get to experience all these different ideas. I was explaining to you on the break, mm-hmm. I was pretty quiet for the first hour and 40 minutes because I haven't seen those movies. But
right.
I do indeed, I get enough of the, Secret Society talk from Scott L. and and conspiracy theory stuff going on, I do get a certain amount of that, and therefore I was able to pitch in just a little bit, but
right.
I don't have a basis for this story yet, and
right.
I know that I don't want to talk about the story because
right.
I can go rent the stories
right. Exactly.
So I can go rent them, right now if I wanted to. I'd hang up and just run out. So I can get that. But what I can't get and what I can get from you, Max, I
mm-hmm.
hope, is what kind of creativity does it take to put something like this together? And I'm talking about the Hellraiser series, but
mm-hmm.
I'm also talking about what you do.
Right.
You put together these boxes, the intricately designed boxes that you work
mm-hmm.
with artists on, and put them out there for public consumption. Where does this creativity come from? And I mean, how come, why is it there? How come it's out there for us?
Well, I mean, the first thing that came to mind when you asked that, I would guess that there's probably a bit of the prophetic involved with it, and I don't mean that in the sense of like I'm a prophet or something like that. It's not what I mean. What I mean is that I dig seeing things that are multi-layered and they tell different stories. You can read it one time and read it one way, then read it another time it means something different. Like just multi-layered like that. So it's I obviously have strong feelings about secret societies and in general, so I worked that into the stories I told, through the Pyramid Gallery.
And the story is evidently pretty amazing. I only read bits and pieces of it. I know Scott L. was all over the site. But yeah. The story is pretty amazing. Philip de Marchand, right?
Le Marchand.
And that entire story. But that was borrowed from Clive Barker, right?
Yes. Yeah, he first wrote about Le Marchand in his novel, The Hellbound Heart, which he wrote before he actually filmed the first movie. And he's just mentioned probably not even a paragraph on him in that novella. But he later was developed in the Epic Comics series, Clive Barker's Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And he put if I remember right, I think the guys who wrote The Matrix had a lot to do with developing the character with Clive for that comic book series. And I was just blown away by that series because the series of comics, it did exactly what Scott was saying. It made me think a little bit deeper about things, particularly with secret societies. So I began a light study of secret societies. And to tell you the truth, I had already developed the Pyramid Gallery. I was studying about these secret societies, and then 9/11 happened. And people have, different views on what 9/11 was and what it was about. But for me, after doing all this study, it kind of confirmed a number of things for me that I somewhat believed, but it took something like 9/11 to happen to actually give me more of a like I said, a prophetic view of it.
What in these things are prophetic then?
Well, I study the scriptures a lot, particularly the book of Daniel, the book mm-hmm. of Revelation, a number of the Old Testament prophets. It's like a fantasy, or you could say it's something prophesied to happen. But there's a storyline, regardless, in the scriptures about the end of days, the end of time, and how it'll happen. And for me, a lot of the symbols that the scriptures use have to do with these beasts. And a lot of people think, the beast will come and he will, do this and that, and but the beasts in the scriptures are not so much a man or an actual beast. They actually represent the nations of the earth, and basically the whole tale is about how these nations develop from one place to another, starting with Babylon, then moving to Medo-Persia, and then to Greece, and then to Rome. And then from that point on, the scriptures were, that's where the last, where we leave off in the scriptures is in Rome. But to carry on, this beast that's been developing from Babylon onward continues to develop and spread itself throughout Europe and then even here in America. So it's just a way of looking, the Bible has a language for the nations and as far as describing what the nations are like and what will ultimately happen to these beastly nations, in a sense. Now, that's not saying that, because I'm, I live in the United States of America, I'm American, there's a lot of blessed things that we have, that every nation has, the civilization in itself, there's a lot of things that we, are thankful for. But at the same time, we have to look at the dark side, just like each human being has a potential for being a very dark, villain like Philip Le Marchand, so these nations also have a dark side that we have to be aware of and have to look out for. And, because they are fallen just like any man is fallen, is imperfect, like we spoke earlier on. These nations also are imperfect. And the scriptures themselves basically give us a little bit of a warning, a little bit of, they prophesy of what they will eventually do or are possible of doing. And I think that we can avert some of these things, if we know that. That's obviously why I'm, I have something to say about these nations, because I think ultimately if we come to an understanding of what they're capable of, I think we can thin them off in that sense as far as them being beasts.
Could it just be nations, or could it be just mankind in and of itself?
I think you're right. I think ultimately it's not even just the nations. I think it is just the nature. It's tied directly into the nature of man and mankind. But also, if you look into the scriptures, that also pulls into something that's not even human at all. We've got these things, the Watchers or the Nephilim, that you know, supposedly are behind a lot of our reasoning about society and about civilization. They supposedly helped us bring about civilization. So if you want to go the whole, what you would call the UFO route, I'm not a huge advocate of delving into UFO theories myself, but I can't help but, after reading the scriptures, draw conclusions to these watchers of mankind that supposedly have helped society along and helped develop these beastly nations, you know. And you can see that there's you've got angels in the Bible which are both you know, good and bad, mm-hmm. that seek to help us and also seek to harm us. So it has a lot to do with my ultimate worldview, obviously. But I guess another thing that helped develop the site was just the way I view media too, because I see media and what I see it just burns me up a lot of time. I can't, you know, I don't even know why I watch TV, but because it creates in me this anger sometimes, and so I use the site to vent a lot of that.
Well,
so
Scott L. has completely gone off of media. He doesn't watch TV anymore.
Really?
So, yeah, he hasn't watched TV in a long time. Only if he's like over his parents' house, or if he, you know, and they have it on. Or
right.
if somebody says, hey, you got to watch this, it's coming up, you know, watch that. It's
I don't blame him.
You
know,
TV.
The same thing, though, it's hard for me not to watch it, too, because I want to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening, what everybody's in. Because, you know, everybody's in taking basically the same thing, at least if you're watching, you know, the major network channels or even cable in general. I'm more interested in keeping my, my finger on the beat of what's happening than, mm-hmm. you know, abandoning it, too. I'm not saying that I think people should abandon it if they feel led to abandon it, but in general, a lot, like I said, though, that has a lot to do with what I produce, is the fact that I've watched the media, and I can see things in the media that just, you know, that rub me the wrong way, and then I use the website to vent a lot of that.
Well, I have to say, I myself get rubbed the wrong way by the media, and... classic example, the Michael Jackson trial.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I know
something interesting about this Michael Jackson trial is that he wore a number of Masonic badges to the trial itself.
He's very into symbolism.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
not saying anything about the verdict or anything at all. I'm just making the observation that he wore these Masonic symbols to the actual trial, which I find, you know, I don't know what that means, if it means anything, but for me, it did resonate with me when I seen him wearing the symbols for some reason. Enough for me to even mention it now, I guess.
Right. But the, I usually watch for my news, I watch Headline News. It's a CNN product.
Yeah, I usually tend to watch CNN if I'm going to watch any of the news channels.
But I watch the Headline News because they don't really dig in, usually.
Mm-hmm.
They give you the headlines. So
right.
There's not that much opportunity for them to dissect and tell you what to think.
Right.
That's not to say that they don't, because they
right.
do. But but there's not that much opportunity to. And that's what I like about
Headline exactly.
News. You know, this happened over here, this happened over there, this happened over there. That's the news. You know, watch us next hour, we'll repeat it. And I really like that format. But I was, the day that the trial came, you know, that the verdict was read, I did, you know, flip between all the channels, and it
right.
was amazing the difference in delivery,
yeah.
delivering this news, because it on one channel in particular, MSNBC, they were all extremely shocked. They were just absolutely floored that he was found innocent.
Right.
It's almost as if they had, you know, like, done the delivery behind the courthouse, you know, and amongst the bushes, and then it didn't take or something.
Right,
you know,
right.
They were looking for a refund. Because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, they're absolutely shocked. They should have been like, here's the verdict, you know, there you go. That's
right.
What happened. That's the news, right?
Well, it's not even news anymore. It's all commentary. It's like it's all blog, you know, blogosphere out there anymore with the news. I mean, if you look at some of these channels, like particularly Fox, I mean, it's like it's not news at all. It's
no.
totally opinion.
It's 100% opinion.
You know.
And they tell you it's fair and balanced, so that drills it into your head that it must be
right.
fair and balanced. But
they call it the no-spin zone or something.
Yeah, and
you know?
It's anything but.
Yeah.
But what happens is the I was just absolutely shocked at how much opinion got into that news. I mean, there were certain shows where it's a format show with a host and he brings on panelists, right?
Right.
Now there you expect opinion.
Right.
Right? Because you're going to have opinions from the guests. You're going to have a host's opinion as well. You know, but at least they're trying to present both sides in that kind of a format. But this was the news,
yeah.
The breaking news. You've got an anchor, right? Not a host. You have an anchor.
Right.
And you've got people telling you what happened, you know, up in little boxes in the corners. And with that format, you're supposed to be being presented with facts, or facts as, you know, the people are seeing them. You know, and they could be laced a little bit with opinion here and there because, you know, you're human, you know, or the people in the corners are human. But the anchor is supposed to, you know, like, run the program, and it's supposed to present these facts. And it was anything
right.
but that. And I was just absolutely shocked at that. But the, that's why I like headline news and I like radio news. I listen to radio news myself.
Right.
Because there's just not much opportunity for opinionating.
Well, it's almost like also with a lot of the media stuff now, it's like they're carrying on reality TV to a new level with these matchups with these stars, whether, you know, Tomcat and, who else, Bennifer and all, I mean, all the, and Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, I mean, all these, this is dominating supposed news channels. This is all what we're getting nonstop. You know, the ring that she got at the top of the Eiffel Tower. I mean, it's all this stuff. All it is to me, I don't believe it at all. I just think it's more reality TV. You know, but without the name, you know, without actually being shown as a show. I just think it's just a new level of entertainment for us, you know. But not being called entertainment at all. It's being sold to us as reality.
Well, when they went 24/7, they had all kinds of hours to fill. So what are they going to fill it with?
Right.
What
right.
they're good at. Hollywood
that's true,
stuff.
That's true.
You know? So 24/7, that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the media is definitely sunk to new lows with the Michael Jackson trial and other things. I mean, but that's just a ready example.
Yeah.
So what's it like being the webmaster? That's one of the things I wanted to ask you. I had no idea if it was even appropriate, but I wonder what the Internet's done for you. How
it put me in contact with a lot of interesting people. It's wonderful in that. I mean, in that light, in some cases, it's hard because I get a lot of the same questions sometimes from people, like, did Philip Lamarchin actually live? You know, and I usually send out a form letter for those. But
I think I read that.
Yeah.
Scott L. Sent, he called me up. He says, you got to read your email. And I'm like, okay. And then he told me that everything, you know, was false, you know. And I'm
right,
like,
right.
Wow, that's an awesomely done fan site. You know, we had no idea.
Well, you know, I've always liked that type of pseudo-documentary thing, like, you know, the War of the Worlds that Orson
yep.
Welles did. And I heard that turned out to be, again, this is all delving into the realm of conspiracy theory. So, and I'm not saying it's one thing or the other, but I heard a story that even that was supposedly a government psychological operation done to test the reaction of people, I guess. But, I mean, it's just an interesting thing that I picked up someplace out there, you know, in the net,
mm-hmm.
About looking into that type of thing. But, yeah, there's other pseudo-documentary things I like the Blair Witch, of course, and the, what else has been done in that style? I just like that style of it's somewhat tampering with reality for a second. I think a lot of people, some people get excited by it, like me, and some people get mad when they find out that it's actually false. And so I've gotten a couple of, I wouldn't say hateful, but just kind of like, you know, mad that it wasn't real, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why they'd want it to be real. But
well, we didn't have that issue with Ghostly Talk, of course, because we just come on here, you know, a couple hours a week and talk. But, but I love a good story just like you do, and
yeah.
You said you did, and I appreciated Blair Witch very
yeah.
much. I appreciated
did
your
you
site.
Did you see the Sci-Fi Channel story that they had put out before the movie Blair Witch that was put
no.
out?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they put up this Sci-Fi Channel thing, and it was just amazing because it was done in that style of like it was, you know, based all on on real happenings. Mm-hmm. And so I had so many friends who were thinking there was this witch that was, you know, from watching this thing on the Sci-Fi Channel, because the way it was done, it actually fooled them into thinking that this movie that was getting ready to come out was based on a real happening. And so it was just, and that was happening. That was corresponding with the first couple weeks that I'd actually was putting my gallery up. So I was really interested to see where that was going for the Blair Witch people, you know, as far as developing that type of storyline.
Well, I was, it was interesting because I don't know if you heard this, but yeah, you did. Before you came on, Scott mm-hmm. L. was saying, why hadn't I heard of this before?
Right.
Well, that's how I was with Blair Witch.
Exactly.
Why haven't I heard of this before? I'm sort of into the paranormal, et cetera, right? I mean,
right.
I've been a ghost hunter for years, you know, I've been doing all this stuff, right? And why hadn't I heard of it before? I think I would have, you know, read something about it. I've been following, you know, paranormal stuff all my life. Why hadn't I heard about it? So I figured it was just either, you know, some very elaborate hoax or something, you know, made up in Hollywood. And, I mean, or it was real that I never heard of and they Hollywoodized it.
Right,
you know,
it was
one of those two things. So, yeah, the made up in Hollywood was the hoax part. So that's the same thing. So it's only two options, and it was it was not real. It was the made up in Hollywood stuff. So,
right.
but it turned out to be, I thought, a very good, unlike Blair Witch 2. But anyway, that's neither
I've
here nor
there. I've never seen the following Blair Witch. I just saw the initial Blair Witch.
Don't bother.
Wasn't any good.
That's not worth a dollar.
Huh.
So if it's a dollar for five nights or whatever, like it is at my video store, it's not worth it. don't bother with Blair Witch 2. Anyway, we have 1 minute left.
Oh boy!
1 minute. So I wanna find out from you.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out your website. Tell us what we can order and things like that.
Well, the website's www.pyramid. Was that a hyphen or a dash? I guess it's a hyphen gallery.com.
And of course, there'll be a link on our website to that.
Well, thank you. I'll be putting up a link for you guys too.
Oh, that would be neat. It's not expected, but that would be cool.
Yeah. Now, you guys, your show is just, I just love the format. I love the relaxedness of it. I think what you guys are doing is really important as far as just the format of your show and the freeness of your show. I just think it's just awesome. I'm sure there's others out there like you, but I mean, I'm not aware of them. So, I mean, I just love the way you guys handle your show and the way you handled your interview.
Well, one of the few shows that you know, multi-host. There are other paranormal shows out there, and there's links on our website. There's links on if you go to pioneer.rollo.net. That's where we're broadcasted out of one of the two broadcasting things. There's links, and there's others, but there's a lot of single-hosted shows, which are just, I mean, they're just absolutely fascinating, but they're a different format. So
right.
What you get to do, and this is the beauty of the Internet, you get to find what works for you.
Right.
So I love it, you know, because there is all of this diversity out there. And Max Lichter of pyramid-gallery.com, thank you so much for being on Ghostly Talk.
Thank you, Doug, for having me.
Mm-hmm. So we'll keep in touch, though.
All right.
All right. Later.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Excellent.
Better transition than most.
Yeah, when I snap down a little snap thing. And anyway, that was indeed Max Lichter of pyramid-gallery.com. And I don't hear myself in the headphones. Do you hear me?
No, but I'm sure we're still broadcasting.
Well, I hope so. With that, I have to release the station. Because I'm sure there's a couple
things. We have to say hi to Devin.
Oh, Devin's back.
No.
Oh.
As in Sean's son, Devin.
Oh, Devin. Oh, hey. Hey, little Devin. So with that, I have to release to the airwaves the rest of the channel. I have to thank everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I learned a lot. I didn't speak very much, but I did learn a lot. And stay tuned, because next week, what's... Do you know who's next week, offhand? Because I thought I had...
Scott Christensen.
Oh, yes, Scott Christensen is next week. Excellent. So next week, coming up on Ghostly Talk, Scott Christensen. With that, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back here next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, till 9 p.m. from the Haunted Basement Studios. This has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.